The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we have on Yates Investing.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the f*** is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
Buy the f***ing dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out, life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies.
The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out here making money right now off of penny stocks.
The two guys is putting in work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity It Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny Strokes, baby.
This episode is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use when we trade. We use it for news scanners. We use it for float checkers. We use it for stocks. Screening. We use it for just about everything, including chat rooms and much more. But that's not all they have. They have YouTube as well. Hot Stocks Luke every single day has great guests on, ranging from Ripster to Mia Khalifa to Gary to all the best guests you need to hear from every single day, all day long. So make sure to go check that out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. And if you look in the replies to this tweet, you will see how to get a discount code for Benzinga Pro. Make sure to go sign up for Benzinga Pro right now. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going In Raw. Today is Sunday, June the 6th, and we got a big one on, boys. We got Yates Investing on today. How are you, bro?
Dude, I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Dude, doing awesome. How are you liking this little meme stock action we got going?
Dude, I personally don't really trade the meme stocks, but hey, whatever. It's whatever. It's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. Seeing AMC at 70 was bananas.
Wild. I mean, I see all the price targets and I'm just blown away. Like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to even say anything about it.
Yeah, no, that's, you can say protect your capital, you know, sell some, but you never want to get in front of a cold stock. It never turns out well. Well, we kind of always start off these with a little, like, how you started trading, how you found out about it, and then into your progression as into a successful trader.
Yeah, so let's see here. I'm 26 and I started trading in college. So really, I never knew anything about the stock market, period. I knew I had, you know, a couple of family members who were invested in the stock market. But other than that, it was just kind of, you know, another world. But I had a college professor, because I studied business in school. And I had a college professor who was extremely, you know, in the stock market. And he kind of opened my eyes a little bit. And I was kind of blown away by, you know, the possibilities of the stock market. And really, you know, it was, for me, honestly, it was more of, I just want to make this money. I want to make money and just be done with it. But, you know, he was the first person to actually get me into the stock market. So I was about 7 years ago or so. Other than that, really, it was not easy, obviously. I think if you talk to anybody that has started the stock market, it's never easy. It's always a challenge to begin with. But I remember, like I said, dude, I literally came from nothing. You know, my parents always worked as hard as they could just to even provide for us. So for me, it was like putting $10 a week in, you know, just from doing certain jobs like mowing grass and stuff like that. But, you know, really it was, man, I remember Hugh talking about market tuition, and I never even really thought about it that way. But now looking back, it was like, wow, okay, that was definitely the case. And I can remember, dude, I can't tell you how many accounts I blew up. I cannot tell you. I can remember going down to like, I don't know, like $10 from 1,000, literally hundreds of times. Like it was unreal. It honestly took me probably 3 to 4 years to even become profitable. And that's crazy now to think about, because it's just the simple fact that looking back, I was just like, wow, I done all this stupid, dumb mistakes. And that's one of the main things is for me now, it's like, okay, well, I have, you know, I found my niche at it, so I can actually, you know, try and help others learn from my stupid mistakes. So that's one of the biggest things that I try and do. And really, honestly, I like to teach the mental side of things. You know, they say in baseball it's 90% mental. Well, I believe that in trading as well.
But I mean, that's kind of how it is. Like, and it's weird to look back on it and see like the 3 to 4 years it took to become profitable, especially like now it just seems people just hop in and making all this money. And you know, with social media and everything, people aren't posting their losses. I mean, you got like Mo Money on Twitter will post his losses every day. But, it just seems like it's all sunshine and rainbows in the NASDAQ when you just look at it from an outside perspective, or it's just too complicated. But, you know, having that college professor like you had, or just anyone, I mean, it's so key.
Yeah, I literally say this all the time, but I owe everything to him. Like, if he wouldn't have just even opened my mind up a little bit. And it was a simple fact that I never, like, had people try and teach me about the stock market. And honestly, I believe that's on purpose. I truly believe that they don't want you to know about the stock market. I truly believe they don't want you to be smart enough, well, to think that you're smart enough for the stock market. So my main goal now in life is to go around to high schools and colleges and kind of just teach about the stock market just in general. You know what I mean? I feel like we're not teaching the younger generation enough.
With the younger generation, I think it should be required like every year, start like the kids in the high school should have to like paper trade.
You know, that's right.
if these kids see 100%. Like, they're like, yo, even though my fake 50,000 is now fake 150,000, that'll still be like, well, damn, if I just did this with my $100 or whatever, they, you know, they just got to start somewhere besides their 401k.
Yeah. And I know like a lot of people aren't like for paper trading because, you know, it doesn't really have the whole
emotions. Yeah.
Emotional side to it. Yes. But dude, I think paper trading is awesome. I mean, that was one thing that I started with was paper trading, and really it got me used to the actual app. It got me used to, you know, just trading in general. So I actually recommend paper trading a lot. Obviously, yeah, don't have the emotional side of it, but it's more of a learning process. I'd rather, you know, you get into it and start making money rather than just literally throwing it away.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is, even, you know, especially when you get into trading, you know, investing is one side, but sometimes just opening up the broker can be so intimidating. That's why we're like the paper trading kind of comes into it. Cause for instance, you know, I remember thinking when I was younger that, hey, if I could just figure out how to buy and sell, I would be like a billionaire. And you know, and then you come to figure out that figuring out how to buy and sell is literally just like step one. Yeah, step like zero of a billion, you know, and even like figuring out like on TD Ameritrade, like what reverse is on like level two, you know, or like even figure out what level two is. And that's where I think the paper trading comes into play is literally just figuring out how to buy and sell. And then I think that's where like people really should step into beer money, we call it, throwing $500 into an account. $500 won't feel good, but if you throw $5,000 into it, you know, that doesn't sting as much, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, $5,000 is a lot to
a lot of money.
I mean, honestly, that's a lot of money. And you know, I was talking to someone the other day. Actually, I think it was on one of these Facebook, or not Facebook, but one of these Twitter pages or whatever that's called.
The spaces.
Yeah. And he kind of opened my eyes up again. He was like, well, because I think we were talking about EV, but anyways, he was talking about like how the regular family couldn't afford a brand new EV vehicle. And I was just sitting there. I was like, dude, sometimes you literally have to take a step back and think about people that aren't, you know, in the stock market. And I really kind of hit me because I was like, okay, wait a second. So I need to stop thinking about myself rather than other people who aren't investing.
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure. We actually talked about that on Wednesday's episode. We talked about the fact that, you know, $300, we talked about a trader who went from making like 140 grand a week to $300 a day or $500 a day. How like that still is insane money. Like
yeah,
$500 a day to is almost double what the average American makes. And as traders, you know, obviously we have no floor for the most part, unless you have passive income, but let's just say trading's your full time. But how much money really is out there, and how, you know, I mean, Zach posted on Wednesday, June 2nd, how he was making like 3 to 10 grand a day 2 years ago. And obviously we've seen an incredible market, you know, anomalies like AMC, but you know, that's insane to think about someone who probably averages $1 million a day 2 years ago. And it was just compounding and really just working his ass off. And now he, you know, to go from $3 to $10,000 a day to a million.
It's insane. Absolutely insane. I mean, today I had an exceptional day because of BCTX, but I seen his post about his $1 million day and I was just like, wow, okay, bro, let's see. Yeah, like, it must be happy or what?
The standard, I mean, there'll never be like someone that does like that. But I guess kind of navigating into like your trading style, you're more of a swing guy from the looks of it on Twitter. Obviously, wasn't a big swingers market the past few months. How do you navigate through like that down market?
Yeah, dude. So, you know, in different markets like that, you gotta basically adapt to survive, obviously. So for me, it's always been swing trading. I just love it more for me personally. I don't like to sit at the computer all day. I'll be honest. I absolutely hate sitting at the computer all day. I do a lot of work, you know, still to this day. But I scalp a lot. I truly do scalp a lot. I don't like posting that on Twitter, you know, because yeah, you have so many people when you post one thing and then they're like, okay, well, when do I get out? When do I, you know what I mean? Bye. And I'm just like, I don't like that. So I just try and like basically keep it at my swing trades, trades that I'm extremely confident in. But yes, I was doing a lot of scalping. It's not what I prefer, but I still like to make money, clearly. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to put my emotions aside and just do this. Who cares? But like I said, I just don't like posting about that just in general, just because people, they don't, you know, new traders, they don't know.
They need someone like, yeah, it's like a holding their hand kind of situation. And then the double-edged sword of saying, oh, this is where you sell could cause the stock to go down, like leaving the other people in it screwed. And there's so many just twists and turns.
Oh, either way, you're the bad guy because you say to sell, the stock goes higher. Now they missed out on gains. You say to sell and people still holding it catch a dip or something. And, you know, then you're definitely the bad guy. There's really no good way to put that. But one thing that I do want to ask is, so with your swings, because obviously, you know, you and I talk a lot about swings and stuff. What's like your process? Because that's one of the questions that I definitely get a lot is, do I look for a chart first or a catalyst first? And kind of where my process goes from there. So I think it's always interesting to ask other swing traders.
Well, swing trading, the chart comes absolutely last. To be honest, I've never been a technical trader. I recently, you know, probably the past 2 years, I recently got more into the technical trading side, but it's always fundamentals for me. Clearly, swing trading, you want to look for catalysts. My biggest thing is bio stocks. I love bio stocks. It's something that really interests me, but I'll look for those catalysts. I'll do the the studies, obviously, over data. Like BCTX, dude, they've been saying this for months.
But no, I mean, BCT, I was actually in BCTX. I got in too early, like 2 weeks before it just started cranking up. What, after you look up data and everything, what all do you dive into to find just your next stock to enter? Like, how did you find BCTX in the first place as a, you know, as a primary swinger?
So, for instance, BCTX was really, it was after the GSI, the cancer stock that went absolutely parabolic. Then I started looking into more cancer stocks and I was like, okay, well, you know, what could possibly be the next thing? And I was noticing the data on BCTX and I was like, wow, this is actually really good data. But I mean, nobody was really paying attention to it. And mm-hmm. The biggest thing was the float, how yep. small of a float it was. I was like, dude, if they do get good data, like, it's going to go crazy. So I was like, I'm just going to park my money here. And really, I really got in at like $3.20 to begin with. And then it went to, I don't remember. I think it went to like around $5. Well, I was scaling out. I was like, okay, well, this is too fast of a climb, you know? So I was starting to scale out. And then like once it came back, because I'm a rinse and repeat kind of guy. Once it came back, if I liked stock, I'm going to get back in. Yeah. Once it came back, it started finding the floor again in the threes. So I was like, okay, I'm going to add again. Well, I added, I don't remember, I think it was like 20,000 shares at 309. And then it went to like 286. And I was like, well, okay. So I added another 50,000. I ended up with 100,000 at an average of like 305.
Good trade.
And then
good
today, trade. Yeah, today it was like, boom. And I was like, awesome. I was like, I'm really glad I held on to this. And, you know, for us swing traders, patience is literally everything.
Yeah.
Patience is the key. And that's one thing that I had to learn early on, because I go by patience, discipline equals profits. And that's one thing that I literally live by. And that's probably my biggest thing that has made me a successful trader is becoming more patient. Because I used to be horrible. I'm not even gonna lie, dude. I was like, oh, dude, it's running, you know? And I was one of those guys that literally just bought at the top and then sold on the way down. I was like, yeah, okay. Maybe this isn't for me.
So you like trading around a core position in your swings. Do you always do this scaling out, or is it just because it was running up too fast and you didn't want it to get exhausted?
See, I usually, like, for instance, like ENZC, I've traded this multiple times. This is one that I'm extremely high on. Right now, I'm up. I couldn't even tell you, dude. I'm up quite a bit on it right now. And I'm not selling. And I'm just not selling because I'm so confident actually in the stock. And I know it's kind of running, but it's more, you know, it's not as fast as BCTX was. BCTX was literally straight up. And, you know, stocks don't just go straight up without doing something. You know, it's either going to go sideways or come right back down. So that's one of the main things, rinse and repeat for me. But yeah, I mean, it's just a judgment call for you, basically. I can't tell others what to do because, I mean, you know, I'll probably be wrong half the time anyways. But it's just something that I enjoy doing.
Yeah, we talk about just having like gut feeling trades a lot just because, you know, if you feel it, you know, it's like that sixth sense. Sometimes you're like this, you just know it's this one went up too fast. It's going to come back. I can, you know, and if it keeps going, you know, so what? I made my loot.
Exactly. And that's one thing. Like a lot of people are like, oh, well, they focus too much on like what they could have made rather than what they did make. Like, dude, move on from it. Just move on. Like be happy with your gains and go somewhere else.
Yeah. And one of the things is that it's really tough in the beginning. But nobody's born a good trader. Like I say this, you know, we say this constantly, is that no one's a good trader. And as your account grows and your experience grows, you know, you make 10% on your account or you make 10% on a trade and you have 20% of your account there. Like that's a real, like to think that the stock market, I mean, even though it's up 94% in the last year, you know, take that anomaly out and, you know, say we give back 8 to 12% returns. Traders sometimes make that, you know, like I know the average hedge fund underneath like a 2 billion AUM tries to shoot for 200%. Like that's like the average. So if you hit 200% on your account and you start with like 20,000, like once you become consistent, start with that 20,000, you know, by the time you get to like 600,000, you make, you make 100% on it, that is a really great year. And that's like one of the things that it's just about being consistent. And one of the ones who I want to give like a shout out to is like Scalper Ryan. You know, I don't know if you guys have, Yates, you've ever interacted with him. He wants to go full time, but that's really, I mean, obviously that's super tough with a family and everything. That's one thing that Dan and I really didn't have to deal with is that, you know, I mean, I had no responsibilities, like none. I had to pay for gas, you know, when I started, you know, like that was like, I had to pay for gas and that was it, you know? So I was pretty lucky. And that's one of the things that like, we never really got to relate to is going full, is having to make that decision to go full time with real responsibilities.
I clearly didn't have any responsibilities either. Heck, I don't have a dog. But for me to go full-time, dude, it still took me a long time to even consider it. I know last year, obviously, was it might only happen once in our lifetimes. I don't know, though, because I'm kind of starting to think, you know, otherwise. But, dude, I literally had to – I was making sure I had, you know, everything in line. I was making sure I had enough money for however long, just in case. And then I got to the point where I was like, dude, just take the chance. What's the worst that can happen, dude? Like, you go back to work? Okay, cool. Like, that for me, that was the ultimate decide. Like, I was like, dude, you know, you literally have to take a chance in life. You know, the main goal for trading in general for the stock market is to get out of your 9 to 5. Like, that's obviously the main goal for majority of people. And for him, if I could talk to him, dude, I'd probably just be like, I know it's hard because he has a family and everything, yeah, but I'm sure he could find like some side jobs or something. You know what I mean? Or yeah, he could start up a small business, like even cutting grass or something like that, mowing business. I mean, he could probably start like a small business, something that he enjoys, something he's good at. And taking that chance. I mean, the worst that can happen is you go back to work. I understand that that's a big risk and a big gamble, but you only live life once, you know, yeah, live it to the yeah, fullest.
Yeah. That's one thing that you're big into as well is the passive income, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm huge on real estate. I'm not a real estate expert by any means, but I'm absolutely big on real estate.
Digital real estate, right? Earth 2.
I have a lot, dude. I haven't even looked at my R2 account in months. I mean, dude, probably since January. But I was just like, okay, well, maybe this will be huge one day.
So you never know, man.
Even did NBA Top Shot. Like, I bought so many cards and haven't even touched it. Like, I'm not even going to mess with it.
That's crazy about the NBA Top Shot. That was all the talk of the town for 3 days, and now. I haven't seen any NFT of Ja Morant dunking on anyone like coming out. You know, it's just, it was just a fad. I don't know. I'd have to check it out. I don't want NBA Top Shot Twitter coming at my neck. But another form of investing that you do a lot of, you see it right behind you, is baseball cards or basketball cards and just sports cards in general. That you swing in those or those like long term holds?
Dude, I actually invest in cards long term. Like recently I bought the Kaboom Luka, the Kaboom Patrick Mahomes, and those are guys that I believe in long term. But dude, I literally live my life investing anything and everything. So here was my thing. I've been buying farms. I've been buying tons and tons of acres because I've noticed that people are moving out of the cities. Well, there's only so much land, you know what I mean? So for me, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to buy this because I think land's eventually – well, land is one of the greatest investments you can ever – I'm like, okay, well, heck, I'm just going to keep buying land. And, dude, I was even going to try and build duplexes, but then the prices just went absolutely insane. So now I'm just off of that. But, I mean, I look for deals, clearly. I'm waiting now. Because I'm not so sure about the real estate market. I'm not so sure about it, so I'm waiting. I'm being patient.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. Instead of doing more real estate this year, doing any deals, I instead went like more like private businesses and stuff like that, just because I know that a little bit better. So the next thing I wanted to ask you is that it seems like you're a little more quiet on Twitter inside the past 6 months. Is that because of the market? Is that just because you just kind of, or maybe I'm just not on Twitter enough, but I'm on Twitter a lot. But is that true? Or like, have you kind of shifted your focus a little bit, or am I completely wrong?
Really, this comes back to how the market is for swing trading.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to, you know, call out those plays that are like, I can't really even say, I don't know. I guess you could say pump and dumps, but at the same time, you can't, because I mean, really, the whole market's a pump and dump regardless.
Yeah.
But it's like I don't feel confident enough. I would rather wait for my, you know, I'm extremely, extremely, extremely patient. So I would rather wait for that setup that I just absolutely love and then call it out. But I mean, heck, I've traded Ford. I've traded CCIV, FSR recently, Tesla. I mean, I've traded a bunch recently, and every car company. Yeah, basically, I'm just gambling here. I'm trying to figure out which one's going to be the next best EV. But really, I mean, I tweet every day.
Yeah, I mean, when the market's not hot, dude, it gets like people get a little salty. You know, it's a lot of negativity. I stop posting as much when the market's not hot, and I don't even make calls.
Twitter's so bad, dude. It's unreal.
Twitter gets so bad. Twitter gets so emotional when the market.
You better have thick skin. You better have extremely thick skin.
I mean, hell, you could have thick skin for trading. Then you get, then all of a sudden your Twitter gets 3,000 followers, and now
you have a huge red day, and then I got fucking fake Jordan Belfort 2234 bitching at me on Twitter.
Like no, dude, it's not fair. I can't believe I can't believe that AMC dropped from $70. I thought it was going to $500. Like, damn it, I lost $50. Like,
I had a military father. Dude, sometimes I realize it's like, dude, Twitter's just as bad. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, Twitter can be super toxic.
Twitter, a lot of the people on Twitter needed a military dad.
I agree with that.
So kind of, I think one of the questions, I mean, you're very open with your personal life, but you're also very, like, you like to keep things to yourself. So what do you like to do outside of trading? I know that you mentioned it a few times, but I know that you enjoy the outdoors. I know that you enjoy building things. Is there anything that has helped that, one, your hobbies, and two, have those hobbies kind of helped you inside the trading world? Like, I know that for me, for instance, like, I love going on walks because it just clears my mind.
That comes back to the whole sitting in front of a computer all day. It's like, I don't want to do that. So for me, going outside is literally one of the best things I could possibly do for trading. I can't tell you how many times I've literally overtraded and just lost money just because I was being stupid. You know, I leave the computer, I'm like, okay, well, let me think about this. And I literally start to think a lot more. But I was in construction for, man, really my whole life. My dad has all had his own construction company. And I would say that kind of opens my eyes towards the whole real estate market. I understand that this isn't really like, you know, 08. Obviously, it's not, because of supply and demand. I seen how the lumber prices were going up. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. I guess that's kind of what you're asking. Kind of like my hobbies. Just I can, you know.
No, dude. The thing is, like, traders, what is your hobby? It's fucking trading. That is the hobby, you know?
That is the hobby. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know, dude. I mean,
but it's like whenever the market, like, if you're just having, like, you know, one of those days, and you, like you said, you don't want to overtrade. Like, dude, I just go play like Grand Theft Auto or like watch YouTube videos. Like, I'm not, like, I know my limit. But it's just like having that thing to just get off the market. You have to be able to like get out of the market. But I guess like talking about like getting back to like getting in for these newer traders, aside from like social media and everything, and obviously screen time, what do you think are like some of the resources that you would recommend that'd be like the best for someone that's really going for that 25K? They want to hit PDT. They've been grinding.
Some of the resources are like... Yeah, just rules.
Hell, we'll take both. Obviously, a resource, great one, is Penny's going in Raw.
If a new trader sit in front of me and they're like, okay, I'm going to be honest. Like, I have people from, you know, where I live all the time who are like, can I come talk to you? You know, and sometimes I'm like, I don't really know you that well, but sure, I guess. And then most or a lot, actually, really, I probably just ghost them. I'm going to be honest with you. But I've talked to quite a few people. And really, the first thing is, you're going to have to realize you're literally not going to win every single trade. You're going to lose. You have to get that to your mind. And I'm such a competitive person, you know, sports my whole life. That's something that, like, it took me a long time to realize, because I was like, dude, I'm not about to lose, you know? And it took me a while to realize that I'm going to lose. So that's why I say that, you know, the mental side of trading is so crucial. And radio says it best, though, like, you never lose, you only learn. And that's something that I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, he's 100% right. But new traders, don't add all at once on trades, obviously. You want to add in increments. You know, I think I usually add 3 to 4 times in a stock, because you're not going to guess bottom. You're just not. I mean, you might get lucky and guess absolute bottom, and that's cool, but you're not going to be able to guess bottom every single time, or top for that matter. That's just not how it goes. You have to realize that you're just, it's more of being accurate than being right.
Yeah, accepting, like, just like, you, it is like, everything's got to be a learning experience, but at the same time, you got to know, like, damn, I can't be learning anymore. I got chill.
I mean, I can say this for all of us. I'm sure we literally probably all learn something new every single day. And that's something that I think will happen for the rest of our lives in the market. Taking profit and cutting the losses quick. Those are two major things. It's, people have to realize that I know you're going to lose a lot. And really, you can become a profitable trader even with like a 30-40% win percentage. You just have to realize that those losses, you have to minimize the losses rather than, you know, but that's tough. One of my biggest things is to make sure you know that cash is a position, clearly. Oh, yeah. Like, that's something that has saved my ass so many times, dude. Like recently, whenever, you know, the market just went to crap the past few months, dude, I was honestly waiting. I was like, dude, I'm going to be patient here. And, you know, I mean, I still lost money clearly, but patience is just huge. Patience is just absolutely huge in trading.
Do you find on the patience side of it more difficult for waiting for something to happen while you're in the stock, or waiting to get that perfect entry, like, you're not even in it yet? And that, because you talk about, like, multiple types of patience, and that's, like, not many people talk about the other types aside from just keep holding, hodl, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, a patient entry is always the best entry, clearly. But like I said, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if the market, you know what I mean? Like, you have no clue what's going to happen tomorrow. Zero clue. But for me, honestly, I think it might be the patience for waiting on the stock to do something. Like BCTX, dude, I literally had to, like, tell myself not to sell it so many times, because I was like, dude, just chill. You know that news is going to come eventually. You just don't know when. And that's the biggest thing is just – sticking with what, you know, what you learned whenever you entered the stock. Go back, read your notes over, like realize why you entered this stock again. And that's something that I had to do. I still have to do regularly. I still have to go back and look, like, dude, okay, why am I in this? And that just gives me more confidence as a trader.
What do you think is the main reason for the majority of your losses? Like, especially, like, if it's a swing, does it, like, oh, I just did my research wrong? Or is it, you know, oh, I just need to be more patient? Or, you know,
That's always like a difficult one for me. For swingers, I'm like, damn, you got to either really trust yourself and have that conviction, or accept the fact maybe your DD wasn't as good as you thought.
So I almost think that, I'm not going to say I'm perfect on swings at all, but I almost think that I don't lose nearly as much from swing trading, because I feel very confident in where I enter stocks. You know what I mean? Even if I enter a little high, I'm still, you know, I'm not adding that full position. So I'm still able to add, you know, down until I find actual support. But I would say over trading is 100% what literally makes me lose money the most. 100% over trading. I'm horrible about it sometimes.
Yeah, that one's always a tough one. That's why we always like to talk about things we can do besides the market.
Exactly. I mean, dude, I'm so bad about it. So bad.
So obviously you're investing in all sorts of stuff. What are you on crypto?
Crypto? So I've actually owned Bitcoin. I had five Bitcoins since 4,800. So I am holding long term regardless. Like, I'm confident in crypto. A lot of people probably wouldn't like my perspective on crypto, but I'm extremely confident in it. I also hold Ethereum, ETH. I hold that as well. Those are the only two that I hold. I traded Doge like twice, I think, but it was like super quick scalps. I was like, yeah.
Dude, whenever I find myself wanting to like scalp crypto, that's when I'm like, okay, this is the definition of overtrading. Put the phone down. Log off, bud.
Dude, I'm confident in it, man, for the future. I truly am. I truly am confident in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those spaces.
I was going to say, from that perspective, are you confident in the price, or are you confident that it, like I see like some things like replace the dollar. So are exactly. You like, okay, so you think that this replaces the dollar and becomes like the international currency?
What does this? I think the dollar loses 1% of value each. What is it? Each month or 3 months? No, maybe it's each year. I don't really remember. But dude, the dollar's going to crap, bro. I'm gonna be honest. We literally cannot keep printing money and not have something happen. You can sit here and tell me that inflation can be beat by more inflation. You know what I mean? It's just
There's like that meme that's like, oh, keep printing money's never turned out bad, and then you swipe to the right, and it's the ones like the Venezuelan dollar is worth less than World of Warcraft gold. You know,
yeah. But I don't. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that you know, crypto will replace the dollar. I'm not going to sit here and say that at all. That's why I'm extremely big in silver as well. You know, tangible assets always do better when the market is down. When stocks and bonds are down, tangible assets are always doing better. But that is definitely one of the biggest things for me, is I just think the dollar is literally crap. Do I ever think that it's going to go away forever? No, I don't. I don't know, dude. You know, that's such a tough concept to even grasp. It's super.
Because like tough. when the dollar's gone, it's like, what are we buying Bitcoin with?
Yeah, like it's. But people have to realize that Bitcoin isn't here just because people are pushing it. It's Bitcoin is being accepted by more and more things. You know what I mean? We have banks accepting Bitcoin. It's just like, okay, well, if Bitcoin keeps being accepted by more and more things, it has more and more value. And honestly, you could say the same thing about Dogecoin. I don't like Dogecoin, don't get me wrong. But really, like, if people are going to start accepting it as a currency, the value of it's going to go up.
Gives it legitimacy.
Exactly, exactly. But I don't know, man. That's a really tough question.
Yeah, I don't ever expect myself to like self check out at Walmart and I pay with 800 Dogecoin. But you know, that was just me at Doge. But no, I mean Bitcoin. No, it's one thing that was like weird to me. I remember, but this is in like 2018.
the Mavericks were selling, you could buy their stuff with crypto. And I think it was, they got $80 worth in the whole year. Like it, one hoodie or a jersey or something. That's what I was, So I was like, damn. But at the same time, I never really understood the idea of buying it, like buying things with crypto solely because like it's so, like it's an investment. That's just the.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole digital side of things. But man, like you see the NFT movement, that's crazy to think about. Mm-hmm. And I kind of see the point of NFT cards. Truly, I kind of do.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to worry about grades no more. You know what I mean? It's going to be truly, it's going to be about the supply and demand of
Many there are. Yeah.
How many are made of it. But that the digital side of things, man, I mean, I don't know. I think it's the future. I truly do. And I'll catch myself listening to Gary Vee all the time. I like Gary Vee. I think
I used to, dude, he's the reason I even started the podcast, because he was always like, you know, start a podcast yesterday. Like, if you're not on OnlyFans, you're an idiot. Like,
I mean, dude, he's right about literally all the stuff he talks about. It's like, you got to think about it. You're like, this dude is pretty smart about it. Like, he's always ahead of the game. So that's one thing that I'm looking at NFT wise. I'm like, okay, well, maybe he has a point. Maybe he knows, you know, for me, it's more of a, I'm going to take this chance rather than sit here and not do anything. Because what happens if in 30 years and, you know, Bitcoin's at 400,000 and I'm just like, well, I could have bought it, you know, at 20,000-30,000. I could have.
Dude, the thing is, like, I don't know if you have an Oculus Quest, like the VR things or not, but man, in 10, 20 years from now, when we're all just living in those and not ever getting out, and you have your Luca like 3-point shot on your virtual house wall or whatever, and it's constantly playing, and only you have it or some shit, you know, it's a flex.
That'd be pretty cool. That would be pretty cool.
That's how I imagine a lot of these are going to kind of turn out, and where it's like, that'll
it's
be
so crazy to think about the future. It truly is. Dude, one thing that I'm kind of getting big on again is tech. Dude, I'm low-key thinking a tech boom comes again.
Really?
Like, you thinking Tesla boom?
Dude, there's so many haters on Tesla, but for me, it's like, I don't know if I can hate on them because of the simple fact they have a ridiculous cult and they do literally everything in-house. So it's like they're doing everything the right way. It's just Elon is just so smart, man. It's hard for me to be a bear for Tesla.
Yeah. So with Tesla, you're investing in the management or the team, like the team, the Musk team.
Dude, yeah. I mean, if you're investing in Tesla, you're investing in Elon Musk. You're not in it for the fucking cars.
I mean, dude, I think it's overvalued, but I'm not going to sit here and go.
It's the closest thing we can invest in SpaceX, you know? He's taking us to Mars.
Imagine when that bitch IPOs.
Oh, my God. I'm in it. Dude, I'm going all in. I'm going to be honest with you.
Dude, that thing's going to squeeze as hard. Like, AMC, this little squeeze on AMC is going to be like nothing. Going to be nothing.
I'm serious. I'm being serious. I will probably put 50 of my portfolio in.
I'm buying June 2080 calls. For the Mars landing
or Starlink.
Ooh, that's gonna be good. Yeah, because then, dude, internet on private islands, boom, dude, problem solved.
I'm gonna be honest right now, I was like, Starlink, that, you know, I live in literally the middle of the woods, like I'm not gonna be able to get Starlink. my cousin got Starlink in Montana. Dude, his internet's ridiculous. It's the fastest thing I've seen. Like, I mean, I think it's faster than whatever I have. I forget what I even have.
Like fiber, 1 gig, probably. Yeah.
I think it's faster than that. Dude, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, I have absolutely terrible internet where I'm at, man. Alabama is not known for their internet connection speeds.
Yeah, Alabama's not known for much or anything besides football.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Yeah, yeah. And it's not – and the football part is not even my team. So, you know, I root for Auburn. Yeah.
Team.
I'm an Auburn fan. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Sorry, bud. You're a Missouri guy, I assume.
No, I'm actually a Kansas Jayhawk fan.
Oh, okay. All right. More basketball. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, hell, I think that about covers it for me, unless you got anything else, you?
No, I mean, you know, I think this has been, this has been fun. You're a fan favorite. I feel like we get at least a few requests a week, and we were always holding it off for something special. And then
he has to leave for a week, so this is the special thing.
It's something special, and then who was it? We had someone on twice, and I was like, shit, like we're having people on twice, and we haven't had Yates on.
Yeah.
Yates and Ultra.
Yeah, Ultra, we're calling you out, man. The people want it.
Yeah, we are calling Ultra out because
he's hiding from us, man. He doesn't want, you know.
He knows we're coming.
Yeah, we know where you live.
Yates, anything you want to plug? Your Twitch, your merch. Those hats are sick. I said it before.
Dude, I don't really sell these. I just give them away.
Dude, plugging something to give away, never a good idea. Everyone's gonna hit you up.
I mean, usually I'll see someone, you know, when I'm out of town, and I just keep these in my truck. So if you see me, just holler, dude. I'll give you a hat.
Hell yeah.
Missouri it is. Here I come.
Yeah. Just for a hat.
I'll just start driving the back roads in Missouri looking for Yates.
Is this how you drive?
It's going to be a rough drive, bud.
All right, man. Well, hopefully we got 3 minutes left to the market, so let's kill it. Obviously, great day for you, BCTX, and thanks again for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, take care.
See you, Yates.
Boom.